We've got the ADA board meeting this morning for Thursday, March 1st, by 10 o'clock. So we need to order and ask Lynn to do a roll call for board members, please.
Mr. Wilson.
Here.
Deputy Commissioner Paraday.
Here.
Mr. Carl.
Here.
Ms. Brown.
Here.
Deputy Commissioner Barnhill.
Here.
Mr. Dick. Mr. Pruitt.
Here.
You have a quorum.
Thank you, Lynn. Would you continue with staff and public, please?
Okay.
John Springsteen, Ada.
Kirsten,
Jim Campanen, Ada. Do we have any public on the phone? Public on the phone.
Thanks, Fran. Item number four is our agenda, and John, you have a change you'd like to...
Yes, Chair. I would ask that we move item 7A until after the executive session.
All right, so 7A will become 7C. And 7C will be 7B, I guess. We'll move the IEP update up to the front. All right. Any objections to that? All right. Jen, you will move the agenda. Is it moved? Good. We're all good. Approved. Item number five is public comments. I did not hear anybody on the phone, but I will ask if anybody on the phone would like to make a public comment. Anybody on the phone? Anybody in the boardroom? All right, I will close the public comment portion. Item number six is 5 minutes for January 11th. 2018.
Move to approve.
Second.
Anybody have any questions, corrections, clarifications? Any objections to adopting the minutes? Hearing none, the minutes are adopted for January 11th. Brings us to item number seven under new business. And we'll start with the Interior Energy Project update, John.
And for the Interior Energy Project update, I'd ask Gene Terrio and Nassim to join. And present.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, Dan Britton. Please come forward. Just to use the standard form of going down through the different components of the project on the LNG plant, the determination on sourcing expanded LNG will be held off to a later date. We hope that actually the utilities are combined under the agreement that we signed with IGU, and there will be a decision for that combined utility to make putting on part two, deciding whether to expand the plant or source LNG from some other source. Just nothing new to report on trucking, on the storage. That's why I wanted Mr. Britton to be here. Of course, we've got storage project going on up in Fairbanks. Construction was initiated quickly after the board's action approving the additional funding. Mr. Wilkin was able to go on a cruise. It did result in some good coverage in the press, front page photos. And then Mr. Wilkin followed up with an op-ed sort of explaining why the storage and expanding the storage removes that initial bottleneck and allows for additional customers to be served even out of our existing LNG plant. So with that, I'd like Dan to just go over a little bit more detail on the current status of the storage project.
Just a brief PowerPoint for you. I think all the board members have a copy of it. I don't know if some of the audience did not. I guess for the record, I'm Dan Britton, president of Pentec. And it's a great opportunity to update you on what Gary called the heart of the Interior Energy Plan and a big part of the project to supply more gas to Fairbanks as we move forward. If you recall, the tank is at 5.25 million gallon capacity. In our original design, we had designed the tank as a single containment tank, but when we went out to RFP, we included the option for responders to offer a full containment tank, which is in the LNG industry in the world is a tank that provides a higher level of safety, a higher level of security as it relates to the integrity of the tank in major incidents. If the inner tank were to breach for some reason, the outer tank is designed to contain the full capacity of the LNG. It's also designed to handle the cryogenic temperatures. So as we concluded the evaluations of the bids, we were very pleased that we were able to select a contractor at a price equivalent to a single containment tank and get a full containment tank for our project. So that's a really big improvement as far as security and safety.
Dan, will the tank be able to take a bullet?
Yes, the outer wall of the tank is 10 inches of concrete. Between the, you'll see some pictures in a minute, I'll go through some of those details. It can take a bullet.
And they call it BAR resistant or something?
Ballistic something resistant.
Yeah.
In siting tanks and evaluating tanks, and particularly the really large ones on some of the FERC evaluations, there's times when they look at what happens to a tank when it's hit by an airplane, what happens to the tank if it's hit by a missile, and the concrete outer wall tanks are the ones that are viewed to be the have the greatest level of integrity, ability to withstand those impacts, and that's what we have in this site. The question after that is, okay, how thick is the concrete? Are we talking about? Is it, you know, is it 10 feet thick concrete? Is it 2 feet, 10 inches? Depends on the thickness of the concrete, really, what type of impact it will take.
Mr. Chairman, just spin in prism, and why would we have bid a single wall tank?
Because it's usually much cheaper. It's usually much more economical, and it's they're in place and in service all over the U.S. They're safe. In our site location, we have a substantial amount of buffer zone around our facility, so we have enough buffer zone that a single containment could have been constructed and used safely. And so usually we're talking many millions of dollars in difference of costs, not $500,000 or $200,000, where you'd be like, why wouldn't you do that? It can be a substantial cost differential.
Thank you.
Yeah. And location is a big key when in that consideration, because we have a substantial space where we're at. We have the ability to go either way. There's some tank locations where they're sited in very close proximity to urban areas, you know, right in a port where there's a high level of activity, a high level of concentration of people working. And in our site, we don't have that. The scheduled completion for this project is the fall of 2019, which puts us completed in advance of the deadline for the storage tax credit with the state of Alaska, which is the deadline is January 1st, 2020. We went through a competitive solicitation for EPC contractors for the tank, for the foundation, and the civil works on site. We invited limited companies with direct previous experience designing and constructing LNG tanks to respond to that bid. We completed negotiations and contract selection in November and December. The contract was signed on December 26th of 2017. And the contractor that's doing the work is Preload Cryogenics, and they're out of the Boston area. We began work immediately in the end of December, given the tight time constraints that we're on. Just the team doing the construction, I'm the principal and project sponsor. We have CHI Engineering is well-known in the LNG industry with a substantial amount of experience in LNG tank construction, maintenance, and operations. Design Alaska, a local Fairbanks contractor or design company that's worked with us before on upgrades to our facilities, is doing our balance of plant engineering with assistance from THI on that work. We have David Prusak as our project manager, and so far Dowell is doing our material testing and inspections. We'll be expanding the QA/QC component to some more specialty contractors as well. As we get into the steel portions of the work, we'll be adding some steel QA/QC companies to add to Dow for that.
Dan?
Yep.
So on these bullet points, the cost for each one of those bullet groups, are all of those coming out of the construction dollars?
So the EPC contract is everything you see, preload cryogenics, subcontractors. The Pentex team, the cost for those are all coming out of the total project budget.
So your time is?
My time will be charged towards the project.
All right. And then is that the project funds and reimburse the FNG or Pentex or whatever? How does that work?
Yeah, it'll be a internal company transfer where my time will be allocated, and then there'll be a transfer over when we do a draw on loan funds back to the operating entity.
Okay.
Into the operating funds. Although Preload Cryogenics is not an Alaska contractor, we do have an incredible amount of the work that is being completed by Alaska contractors. I'm very pleased that we were able to do that, especially given the specialty nature of this construction. Right now, all the work that's been completed to date has primarily been Great Northwest. It's a Fairbanks civil contractor. We've got Anchorage Sand and Gravel that is building the precast concrete outer panels that you'll see some pictures or some drawings of. Golder and Associates, Alaska engineering firm, doing all of the geotechnical. Arctic Foundation doing the thermal testings. Ready Concrete, that's a Fairbanks concrete company. They're doing the flat work concrete, so that's the tank foundation. We've got Fulford Electric, Diamond Fence, and others. So we have a lot of the work that's being completed by Alaska contractors and Alaskans.
Dan?
Yep.
So these subcontractors?
Yep.
Were they selected by the general?
Yeah.
And they were part of the proposal?
They were
listed?
Some of them were listed as part of the proposal. The larger ones, for example, Great Northwest, Anchorage Sand and Gravel, Golder and Associates, Arctic Foundations, and Rady were listed as part of the proposal. The others that have smaller components were not. But the preload is responsible for all of the subcontractors' work. Our contract with preload is 100% performance and payment bonds.
Is there any, I don't know if this is the right place to put it, but is there a way that you could actually put a camera up and take shots as the project progresses?
We've got that loaded up for you.
It's a great idea, and we've got a minute of time lapse to show you the work that's been completed.
But and then we can go online and see a picture of what's going on.
You can. I provided Carson, I think, a link. I'm not sure if he's had a chance to send it up to the board yet. The one challenge we do have at the site is we've got terrible internet connection, so we've got a very low bandwidth. And so when we provide you with a link to look at the camera, right now it's slow and sometimes won't load. I can provide you with an app for those that are interested that makes getting in there much easier and works better. When you are provided the link, just be patient. And we're kind of at the tail end of nothing. There's nothing out where our site is, so the internet service is terrible. We are working at trying to perhaps look at put up a taller tower where we can do a Wi-Fi connection to the office to improve things. But for now, it can be a bit frustrating if you're trying to look at the camera and the link through the web connection. I do it on the app all the time on my phone, and it works well.
Can you take the app and then put it onto the website? And even though it's not real time, that may be delayed a day or two, that you can still see the progress?
I don't know. I'll ask that question for you. But we are taping all of the construction activities, recording all of the construction activities, so we'll be able to provide you with periodic time lapses and a complete time lapse when the project is completed.
All right.
Mr. Chairman, I'm not saying you're a geek or anything, but most people look at cameras of little bears or baby chicks in the nest. Thank you, Mr.
This is a baby chick. My
world. Next slide.
This is just basically the site layout. It's probably a little bit difficult for you to see on the screen, but the big circle up to the north is the new tank. You see several rings there. One ring is the excavation of the outer limits of the excavation, the limits of the tank itself, limits of the inner and outer. The kind of gravelly looking area is basically new pad that we're putting in, and the buildings that are down to the south directly out of the tank is where we'll have some new balance of plants. We'll have a new control room, new boiler room, new vaporization, and spill containment. The design philosophy for the tank is we will have a significant amount of redundancy. Example, the tank has three pump wells that are installed. Each one of those pump wells will have 100% pump installed. So if one pump fails, we can have a second pump that's running for 100% of our needed capacity and have a third in reserve. The vaporizers we design will have three 50% capacity vaporizers. So if one fails, we always have one in reserve. And so we're making sure that we have significant reserves so that the send out from this facility will not be interrupted. In addition, we'll be able to direct LNG from the truck offloading station directly to the vaporizers. So in the event we had a problem with the line from the tank feeding the vaporizers, we can take LNG directly out of the trailer, straight into the vaporizers and out into the system. So trying to put as much redundancy in the system as we can.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes?
Just what's the diameter of that tank?
About 100 feet in diameter and 100 feet high, plus or minus a few feet here or there. But that's the rough dimensions, 100 by 100.
So I'm going back to cameras again. I'm just thinking out loud. You know, I think it's important that for security reasons that you have robust security arrangement, not only fencing, but cameras play a big role. And I would hope that somehow getting with local internet providers or whatever, that you could set something up from a 24/7, from a camera standpoint, anybody comes up to the front gate, you know, all sides of the facility are monitored. Pretty critical to the Fentex operation. We have some sort of that you can monitor it from a central location.
As part of when the tank is in operations, 100% we'll have that capability. Actually, the tank is going to become our new communications tower. 100 feet high, we can get a very good direct look at our head office. And so we can get an excellent connection there and be able to communicate back and forth. We will have to follow the codes, et cetera, and have security cameras around the perimeter. As part of our operations, we have to communicate with Homeland Security with our existing facilities, and we've just started that communication on this tank project. We sent a notification to them saying we're modifying our facilities, we're installing this tank. And so we're just beginning that conversation of things they're going to recommend and want to see in the security of the facility. So,
do you have to put, lighting for airplanes and all that?
We've got two FAA notices of no hazard to aviation. The crane during construction is the highest object, and that requires lighting. The tank itself does not require lighting, but we think we probably will put some lighting on. But
it's fairly close to Metro Field, isn't it?
It's less than a mile from Metro Field, so we have had to get a special permit from PHMSA for that location, although it's not in the flight path.
Okay.
Anything under 115 feet doesn't require a light.
Yeah. Okay. So, but we do have, we did file with the FAA and have our findings of no hazard air navigation.
The pumps you spoke of, Dan, are they electric pumps?
They are. Yeah.
And then when GBA goes down, for as they do on occasion, what's the backup?
We'll have backup power generation, such as we do at our existing facilities.
Just a regular gen set?
Yeah, it'll be about probably a half megawatt gen set that'll run off LNG. It'll be run off natural gas.
We're going to bring diesel?
I don't want diesel on the site, yeah.
Thank you.
And yeah, our facilities now run the UVA powered results. So when we talk about utility reliability, if you want to look at ours versus a power company, you'll be pleased to see that ours is significantly better than any in the state. This is just an overall look at what a full containment tank looks like. We've got the outer side of the tank, which we talked about, is 10-inch concrete. Those panels are precast concrete made in Anchorage that will be trucked to the yard. They'll be about 85 feet long. Those panels will be tilted up. Once they're tilted up, there's a spiral lining that puts it under stress around the entire tank, and then it's a layer of shotcrete at the end of that. In between is a 3 feet annular space, and then the 9% nickel inner tank. The annular space is filled with a blanket insulation and then perlite. And if you, anybody's a gardener and you've seen your garden soil, you see the little white pellets that are in there, that's perlite. And so that 3 feet will be filled with perlite. So when you ask the question about a ballistic as well, if a ballistic did penetrate the outer tank, the likelihood of making it through the 3 feet of insulation once its velocity has been reduced so much as it's very highly unlikely that it would ever reach the inner tank. Just to give you an idea of what's going on under the tank, we excavated all of the silt and isolated materials 10 to 15 feet below the surface. Down at the bottom, we have the thermosiphon, the flat loop thermosiphons to keep this ground frozen. We're going to keep this ground frozen for the life of the tank. We've got an insulation layer and then gravel backfill compacted to minimum 95% compacted to the top. The outer ring wall of the tank is about 5 feet thick, and the inner tank is about 3 feet. And then this little layer here, there's 3 feet of insulation that goes under the bottom of the tank to minimize the induction of the cold down into the ground. So one question that's been asked from some others is, it's a little bit counterintuitive, but we have to actually have the ability to heat the foundation and cool the ground. And that's, why would you do that? And the concern from the geotechnical engineers is that if we didn't have an ability to create a thermal break, the LNG could make the ground too cold. It could take it from our desired temperature of about 28 to 30 degrees down to 0, minus 10, minus 15 if the LNG temperature, and then it will become a wick for water. And they don't want us to be wicking water from outside of our foundation in to the foundation and creating ice lenses and jacking the tank. So we will have the ability to create a thermal break from the LNG, which we're not sure we'll ultimately need. If the insulation performs as designed, that might be sufficient, but we'll have the heat there needed. And then we'll have the ability to cool not only underneath the tank, but then we'll have the thermal siphons around the perimeter of the tank.
So you put a heating loop in? Okay, Rayhow heating loop or something?
It's essentially that. I've got a picture you'll see, but there's a flat loop system at the bottom of our excavation that goes to...
That's a CO2 loop, right?
CO2 loop, yeah.
And then you'll use a glycol loop of some kind to take care of the heating loop?
Yes, the heating loop will be a glycol loop that comes off of our boiler system. Oh, can you go back just one slide? I just wanted to, there was a question early on in the project, I think from our chairman, wanting to know what our quality control, quality assurance program was for this tank. Obviously, we want to make sure we're following strict and stringent quality control, quality assurance. This is a daily report that comes in. This is Golder and Associates, the geotechnical engineer. They have been on site, their engineer, for the entire time of the excavation and approving all excavation final grade elevations, approving that they've reached the right gravel, that the placement is passing the appropriate compaction tests. In addition, Preload is using MAPA for doing their compaction tests. We have brought in Dow and are basically doing equivalent tests at the same time right now. A little bit of redundancy on that, but we want the message sent out early and often that we are watching and paying close attention, particularly with these key components. So, when it came to doing the pre-testing on the gravel, you know, we split the sample, sent part of the sample to the Dow lab, part of the sample to the MAPA lab. And so we're confirming all of those results, and everything so far has been going great.
So, Dan, I appreciate that. I think that's very important. What about the safety part of the portion of the work? Obviously, for the general, the sub is an owner. So safety plans, is, do you have a safety consultant working with as an owner, with you as the owner? Does the general contractor have one? Is someone reviewing that? Is there safety, just where are we at on the safety side of the project?
So as far, we had a requirement for a safety plan, a QC plan, a QA plan, material testing plan as part of the contract, and the contractor submitted that. We were satisfied by their plan. We haven't required any additional from the owner's side while the EPC contractor has control of the site. As we bring in balance of plant contractor work, we'll have to coordinate and add additional safety measures. At that point, we may need to bring in our own responsible safety personnel to make sure everybody's properly following protocol. So right now, it's the contractor's responsibilities, and they're working under the plan they submitted as part of their EPC contract.
Yeah, just as a suggestion, I think that's important that you have your own. I also think that when they present a safety plan, that you have a professional outside consultant or internal, whoever's with the credentials, review it for approval.
We did provide some comments back. We sent it through David Prusak and Stantec. They had some of their internal safety engineers review the plan that was submitted. We did actually have a couple of minor contracts with regards to their ladder safety and a few things that we did respond back to them. So we did some of that.
Okay, thank you.
This is actually one of our engineers is a pilot with Design Alaska, and he was out flying and took some overhead pictures of the site. You can see the center, like the donut in the hayfield, so to speak. In the middle, that's the tank excavation, and in this picture, it's pretty much down at final grade, and this is where it was ready for the ground loop thermosiphons to be installed. You can see our existing facility in the black fenced area with our four tanks in place.
I thought you got Tim, it was a drone.
Yeah. Not yet, but I'm going to have some drone shots taken as well of the facility. Just another overhead picture, just to give you an idea of the site layout. The proximity to Great Northwest's facility has worked out very well. We've installed a nice road across the flood channel that's to the north of our facility, and they're coming straight out of their pit, across the ice road, right into our site. So moving the gravel materials has been very efficient.
Gary?
Yeah, when we look at the four tanks, the bullet tanks, upper right, do all four of those go to North Pole at the end?
No, the plan is for two of them to go. The two far left tanks are 75,000 gallons each. They're the newest of the tanks. The other two we actually purchased used when we put them in service. But those two 75s are a nice match set and will make a good setup. The other two 50s, we'll look for other opportunities for places to put those.
Thank you.
There's the ground loop that we were talking about. This is the on the base of the excavation. You can see those pipes on the ground. That's the ground loop cooling system. So there's a supply and return. Total of, I think, 12 separate runs designed so that if at some point we actually lost one or two of those runs, we would still have the necessary cooling capacity. They were pressure tested to 600 psi and still under 100 psi of pressure during the, and monitored daily right now during the construction.
Is that just A53 steel, just normal steel, nothing fancy?
Nothing fancy, just
welded, all welded in
all,
place.
All welded, yeah.
Tell us about the weld inspection.
So the weld inspections, they were all, the tank, the inner tank itself is 100% radiographed weld inspections. The materials like this go through sampling. Arctic Foundations provided all of their shop drawings and shop testing, welder certifications. The inspection of all of these tubes under pressure test, they were inspected by the preload and the contractor, and as I said, will remain under test the whole time that the work is under construction. This second picture here, this is where the ground piping comes up to the risers. These risers will be extended as we begin to bring the level of the ground up, and then ultimately we'll have an ability to be mechanically refrigerated or for us to put passive refrigeration on these. And as Bernie has talked about, is that we have a lot of cold energy around with this LNG, so we'll be looking for the opportunity to install exchangers where we can use the cold energy as necessary to, so we can avoid paying for mechanical refrigeration where it makes sense. Next slide. Above the thermosiphons is about a foot of backfill, and then we have 4 inches of insulation. This is the insulation getting placed, and it's around the entire bottom of the tank and the trench down the thermosiphon. Next one. Is all the insulation placed, and you can see the first lift of gravel going on top of the insulation and the compaction beginning. So very pleased with the materials that are going in. It's almost concrete with the amount of density we're getting, and we're getting 95 to 98% densities out of the compaction. We are stopped right now the last couple of days because of that wind and the blowing snow and the extreme cold. We had a section that froze before we could get compaction, and we had to remove it. So they have to wait until it warms up to about 10 degrees. 5 to 10 degrees.
What % of the material is?
It's 2% within optimum, and I can't remember what optimum is off the top of my head, but every moisture test that we've been getting is within 2% of optimum. So they're monitoring moisture very closely as well as the compaction. And then
how many layers are you going up?
We're going to do 12-inch lifts, at maximum 12-inch lifts, and ultimately there's going to be probably 10 to 14.
So how do you handle the top of the frozen lift versus putting on unfrozen gravel on top of it with the moisture?
The top of the frozen lift, and the geotechs are fine with, and then bringing the next layer of compaction on. They do a rough grade on it with the grader, and then they begin the next lift.
And they're not concerned about once it warms up settling?
No, because there's very little moisture in this material. It's pretty dry material.
Sounds like they've already achieved the compaction. So there's not enough moisture in there to concern about any frosty.
Compaction is a function of a density of the product you're putting in. It's frozen material.
But they've already compacted and frozen.
But it's going to freeze. The top's going to freeze before, the next day, you come back, the top layers are going to be frozen. You're putting unfrozen ground on top of it.
Right. So before it's frozen, we've received compaction, and there's no standing water anywhere on the...
No, it's the between the layers. When you've got your compaction, but it's still frozen ground now.
As we go, each layer will be refreezes each day.
I'm just concerned how they adjust for that settlement.
They're monitoring the temperature with each during compaction, and so the layer that's being put down is above freezing. They're not letting it freezing until the compaction is tested and reached.
Well, as he stated, they had to dig out some because they didn't get it compacted quick enough with the wind blowing. The wind chill froze it before they could get it compacted. It looks to me like this son of a gun is somebody has to be right there and don't lay out more than you can get compacted.
Exactly. They're doing small lifts and compacting as they go. And as I said, we've got the geotechnical engineer is on site the entire time and approving each next move. So next one, just another shot. You can see from up above the layer of insulation and backfill. Next one, and just the current status. So the excavation is completed, both for the tank and the balance of plant. We excavated the materials the same for where our balance of plant structures are going to go as we did the tank. The flat loop evaporators are installed, pressure tested, and are holding. The backfill, as you've seen, has started, and the insulation layer has been installed. As far as the engineering and the tank itself, we're in final design in the outer wall and the preparation for fabrication of the precast panels in Anchorage. They're going to begin the first panel in the third week of March. And as far as the QA/QC, we'll have people there at their facility doing the testing of the concrete as well as their layout of the panels. We'll also be testing the bolts of the materials that they're using in those panels.
Will you rail all those panels up?
No, they're going to truck them.
85-foot panels?
Yeah.
You have rail spur right down there, don't you? It gets close.
We have a close, but it's not active use and it needs some upgrades. And it's the contractor's responsibility for the movement of those panels. I believe it's actually part of Anchorage Sand and Gravel's contract to reload to deliver them FOB our site.
What is one of the panels weigh?
I don't know the total. I haven't asked that question.
What is the expected first date of the first tip-up?
In June. First week of June.
In June?
It's got a
schedule.
I believe, again, it was the chairman had asked to see what the Gantt chart schedule looked like, and you won't be able to read through it very clearly here, but you can see the schedule of each component of the project, and if there's any particular questions, I'd be happy to answer them on the schedule.
So I will note that in August, it shows the outer wall complete, the dome in place, dried in, which would look very, very well. The August meeting, perfect.
Yeah.
Let's look at that.
That would be great. So, we would love to tour the board.
Yeah.
Mr. Chairman, if you can coordinate that, we'd love to do so for...
Well, we'd see it. We'd see a tank.
If anybody's in Fairbanks, any of our board members in Fairbanks or any other members that if they're there and just want to pop by, I make regular trips to the site myself, so I'd be happy to take you by. And the timing of the outer wall and the dome roof, and that becomes our essentially our building weather proof for the construction of the inner tank. So that's one of the things that's allowing us to meet schedules. Get the outer wall built, the roof on. We can then begin to climate control the inner tank, and that's when they are the inside, and they can begin constructing the inner tank. The inner tank is plate, 9% nickel plate. It'll come pre-rolled, and they'll be welding all that plate together inside the tank.
So, what did you do with all the excavation you took out, all of the waste material?
So part of it is, and can you go back to the...
Probably contractor...
There must have been a lot of waste from others.
There's quite a bit of it is on our site, just to the west of the pad where we're building, and it'll get graded out, and just we'll plan along. Essentially, it'll become a buffer for us around the facility. some of the materials have gone to Great Northwest.
And would you speak for a moment about PHMSA and your relationship?
So actually, we had our first PHMSA has PHMSA is the Pipeline Hazardous Material Safety Association. I think I can't remember the AAL. It's DOT agency. Sorry, thanks. It regulates all LNG facilities, our distribution system, transmission pipelines. They've assigned an inspector for this construction. That inspector did his first inspection last week. He's very pleased with what he saw, asked for a couple of additional drawings, which we've provided. So we expect to see him monthly out of our facility. We did have to go through a fairly extensive process in order to get our special permit to site this, including an environmental assessment that was provided to PHMSA at the time. And we'll be needing to renew that, update the special permit here in about a year's time.
Is this an in-state inspector?
This is a federal employee that lives here in Anchorage, is part of the Anchorage PHMSA office.
Do we have to pay for his inspection, or is that something that
Not for the PHMSA. We do for all our fire marshal permits. We have to pay for each fire marshal submittal, and our fire marshal permits are quite expensive. But the PHMSA is, we do not pay for the PHMSA inspection. It's covered under their federal funding.
All right. Any further questions on the animal tank?
Oh, sorry. We do have a very short 1 minute video clip that is our work to date.
Any questions on
You gotta have a couple of scotches while you're watching.
Yeah.
Get it all in the sink.
What period of time is this?
This is since we started in December until the end of last week. One thing I did forget to mention, as we picked up on that one piece of pipe that was installed, the black piece of pipe, we're installing thermistors, which is temperature sensors, underneath the tank every 15 feet. And we've got 5 runs of those thermistors, so we'll be able to see the temperature profile underneath that tank every 15 feet. And so we'll know exactly what's going on under that tank and be able to monitor it. And then as far as the life, design life, 75-year design life, so we made sure that in the event that the we got climate change, Fairbanks warms, although this morning it didn't feel like that was going to happen because it was minus 30, and we can no longer get the cooling necessary out of the passive refrigeration systems, we can add the cooling capacity from the LNG or mechanical refrigeration to keep the ground frozen regardless of what the ambient conditions do in the future. Thank you.
What is the app that you spoke of?
I'll send it through Karsten, but I'll send the app that you can download. It has a password as well that's required for it, but I'll send that to whoever's interested.
Fairbanks has the honor of being one of the nation's coldest cities, and the last 2 weeks we've proven that.
Yeah.
It's been nasty.
Yeah.
The wind is what's been interesting. We normally don't have that kind of wind, but the wind has been chilly.
Yeah. Isn't that good for sales?
Don't get me wrong, I sell winter. And it's hard to sell.
Selling business?
Good for sales, tough for the construction activities. Those guys had to do a lot of snow removal. until every layer had to get all the snow removed, and then when we put those thermal siphon pipes in, they had to remove all that snow by hand over the entire
patch. Well, because she's a vacuum truck.
They had power brooms going, they had leaf blowers going, they had everything going. Because you couldn't drive around there. The whole thing was covered in ice.
You could put 100 foot of 4-inch hose on there and suck it up like Sherman went through Atlanta.
I'm going to give you the foreman's, your
name. Absolutely. My mom makes ugly kids, not dumb ones. You got to pollute all your pollution.
So, Dan, don't go anywhere. Where are we at on the conversion specials?
Our HR and Dan and I worked on wording for a position. We did transmit that to IGU. Jonah Stewart spoke to their chairman. They had a couple of suggestions that we thought were reasonable. We're going to incorporate those in to that position description. And I indicated to Jonah that we do need an official indication from them that they approve with the position we hire. And we're expecting to get that.
Can we give a preference to an Alaskan? They've done a lot of conversions in Anchorage here in the valley. Can we make sure we get an Alaskan for this job, or try to, please?
We definitely, it's going to be a position at FNG. Ultimately then transferred over to the consolidated utility. So it's going to be a person in Fairbanks.
Perfect.
Gary?
I would just suggest, we've been beat up on the conversion issue. Some of it's legitimate, most of it is not. But I would suggest that we get away from using the word conversion. Because really, we do have conversions where people are going to convert from oil to gas. But also, we have new foundations where people are going to put in new boilers. And then we also, as in Dean's case, we're having facilities that just are timed out, and we need a new replacement. It's not a conversion, it's a replacement. So really, there's three verticals there. So I would hope that we don't just get away from conversions. And I suggest that we call it a customer crusade, because that's really what we're after.
Customer crusade. And have them ride horses with armor on.
But we're after those people 2 years from now to have confidence in this system. And that's why we're doing this. And so when the time comes to sign them up, we want a line at the door. And that's three different needs for gas. And we play into the hands that those that can't see the forest for the trees when we just continue to talk about conversions. So I just offer that for the record and for you guys to think about.
Fred?
So I was just going to add, and now that we have a definitive timeline to when additional supplies are available, we've refocused some of our internal efforts at FNG as well, discussing our responses to customers now where we can direct them to, we will have LNG for you by this date. We can start adding service by this date, perhaps even as early as this date. I've refocused our operations manager and requested he get updated new pamphlets from all mechanical supply houses out of Fairbanks that have the recommended boilers for customers that if they can't wait until the tank is built, that they have the best choice for conversion to minimize their conversion cost or needs once the LNG is available. So now that we have a direct line of sight to where we can have customers, we're also doing that just internally now as well prior to the new hire coming in.
Dan, can I ask you to think about my example, Jim, that we spoke about? And we know Jim, but he's a squared away guy. But I use him as just the poster child. So anything that you're going to put out to the gyms, would you make sure that we get our hands on it too?
Sure, and that was the example. I had a whole meeting on gym to discuss how we respond to those inquiries and how we deal with those, and we've changed the way we look at those and the way we're going to communicate with customers. We're going to have for our front office personnel that field the calls from the get-go, can give them better direction. Also have a Q&A that they can follow that provides them with the responses we want them to be giving the customers.
Thank you.
Chris?
Mr. Chairman, just a lighter moment connecting to my senatorial colleague from Fairbanks. I once had a job applicant in Barrow who, under reasons for wanting the job, he was in Fairbanks, said he wanted to move someplace warmer. That's a true story.
Guy that works in Juno.
Yeah.
So, Mr. Chairman, on since you brought up the conversion specialist, the IGU board recently also received the report from their conversion consultant. I believe that it will be a useful document once the two utilities are done, and the personnel that we are hiring will be a body of work that they can then help to implement. One of the findings in that is a suggestion that on-bill repayment or financing mechanism that would be available to the utility would be very helpful, particularly with residential customers. And I've been working with Juno with a Fairbanks representative on that legislation. So I think both the efforts that IGU has had on conversion, now the effort FNG, the existing service provider, the personnel that's going to be hired, the reconfiguration of the working conversion group in Fairbanks, that's a combination of lenders, mechanical contractors, local utilities. It's all sort of coming together, and as Dan indicated, now that we've got a specific date that we can start talking to people about, you know, when the resource is available, it really helps to get that. So.
Isn't there precedence for doing that? I mean, don't utilities now? I know Golden Valley, we put in a three-phase system. It was almost $600,000, and they financed, and I just paid monthly payments at a very reduced interest rate, and it worked out perfect. So there is. Isn't there precedent for utilities to do this kind of thing?
There is murky, and basically what the lawyers have told us is the statutes are silent on it. The example that you just gave was the customer paying for part of the utility system. That's on the outside of your wall. That belongs to the utility. The conversion is what you do to help the customer with the apparatus.
That's a good point. Yeah. The wall. We pay for it for the utility.
Exactly.
So how do we have the residents pay for all the utility pipes? That'd be great.
At some point, we probably will.
I got a couple questions. One is, is there a plan to actually start putting services to the customer's outside wall prior to the tank being used for the storage tank, to try to get ahead of instead of having a lot of services all at once, to try to have homes ready prior? Is that people thought about that, or?
Yeah, so my position on that, and the direction that I've given is, and Gary's example is kind of goes to that question, particularly for new construction, is that any inquiries for new construction, whether it be residential or commercial, from now on, that people ask, they want a service installed ahead of time, our response is that we'll do that. The one thing we're considering is we don't want people just putting service lines in because it's a nice thing to do, and if they want to tell people if they sell their home, gas is available, right? We've got that expense because we subsidize the installation. So what we've done in the past, and we'll probably do it again as long as everybody concurs, is have what I call a six-month conversion agreement. So within 6 months of the gas being available to you to use, or from us putting your line in, you agree to begin using the gas, and if you don't, you'll pay for the actual cost of the service installation. If you do, you pay the $50 that's a subsidized cost. That keeps people from just
speculating,
putting it in just because it's something nice to have.
Service cost?
It's been around $800 to $1,300 for a residence, and somewhere around $2,500 to $4,500 for a commercial, depending on the size of the meter. Larger commercials can get much bigger, higher than that, mostly in the meter cost and the regulated cost. The lines themselves are depends on, concrete, pavement. New constructions is great for us, and we love to be able to take advantage of new construction because they've usually got the yard all torn apart. We don't have to do any restoration work. We can come in, we can do open excavation straight to the house and backfill, and we're out of there. And they take care of the landscaping as part of their overall construction. So that's the idea. The next question for us is, depending on how the tank build is going, as long as everything's on target for schedule, which I'm confident we will be, then we might be looking at, you know, in 2019, just going ahead and saying, okay, the doors are open, we've got service available, we see the light, we're going to be filling this tank in the next 2 months, let's go ahead and get these services moving quicker.
And so, on the IG side, do they have a formally adopted business plan of performance on the combined utility?
Mr. Chairman, they do have a plan for the conversion or combination of two utilities. I know Dan, you had some input into or seen a copy of it.
So do they have an adopted performance? I mean, they have a business plan, an adopted performance with a matrix in order to judge how it's going. Has the board done that?
I'm not sure if you can say take it to the adopted pro forma. They used the pro forma in evaluating, finalizing the PSA and the finance agreement that laid out some scopes of work and requirements as far as the bond authorizations, and it's that pro forma that was driving everything. I'm not sure that their board has officially adopted that performance. They definitely have one that they're using that's guiding them and guided their decision to move forward with the PSA and the FAA.
Is it an unreasonable ask to have that happen at closing so that we turn into a lender? We have a metric to judge their performance by? That's typically what happens in the business world.
It's a requirement within components of the finance agreement that they be able to meet certain criteria with the financing coverage ratios. Mark, you probably can rifle them off the top of your head better than I can, but which include their projections of their capital cost installations, the number of customers that they're going to add, their ability to repay bonds, and then the assessed financing and minimum coverage ratios, etc.
Yeah. So those are plan of performance that tell everybody what their expectations are. So we're not second guessing. I think we should have that.
Yeah, we do have that as a baseline as part of the agreements.
It is part of the agreements. It's also the if you want to fund it.
Has it been formally approved by the board? Their board?
Well, yes, to the extent that those are in the financing agreement. So, I mean, they signed the financing agreement.
And that was part of the financing agreement.
The requirements for coverage and the other things Dan was talking about was part of it.
Yeah.
So
they signed up
the capital plan that reflects the cost of the for coverage through rates.
Right.
Was part of it.
So bottom line is they know what they signed up for. They signed their names. All right.
They haven't bought it yet.
They signed it. It hasn't closed.
That's right.
No, it's going to close here. Yeah. It's going to close here very soon.
Well, we hope. I just want to make sure that we have something that shows what their expectations are, what their plan going forward is formally, and what their combined utility performance is expected to be over the next few years, because it makes it a lot simpler as a lender to track how they're doing. That doesn't mean it can't be modified as time goes on, so we have to have a baseline.
So now
I haven't seen that, quite frankly.
Well, and Mr. Chair, they're going to have a fiscal year 19 budget approved before June 30.
Yeah, that's for 1 year.
That's
only for 1 year.
So, Mr. Chairman, do you have fear that this isn't going to be go through?
No. It's just that we transition from an owner to a lender.
Yeah. I think it's a, my opinion is we have to do this. We have no choice. It's the only way to move forward in Fairbanks. I know there's still some dissenters, but it's hard to believe, but we still have a few.
Gene, when I was thinking about conversion, is the concern or limitation on conversion access to capital or access to subsidy from a homeowner's perspective?
Well, we want we want mechanisms to be in place that help bring low-cost capital and possibly, grants can perhaps come through to the utility, maybe through the borough government accessing the EPA non-attainment grants. So we're just trying to put tools in place that will facilitate that.
Where I was, I'm just brainstorming, but is it possible we should roll up a pool of a loan out of the ADA revolving loan fund to the utility for conversion purposes at our standard rates and terms?
I'm not sure that's the most efficient tool for the cost of capital that the ADA revolving fund requires. I think that Gene has been working as IFP team lead on other instruments that would better serve that purpose. If it's something that would be available, but I understand that there are lower cost capital tools for this purpose.
And Mr. Chairman, back when the local conversion working group was engaged, and again, the local lenders, mechanical contractors, there were a couple of in-state lending institutions that indicated that within their portfolio, they had slices of low-cost capital. Now, whether that is still available because it sort of languished for about 2 years because of the delay of the project, we would certainly want that group to investigate that possibility.
Sure. IGU or the borough should be able to do the tax abatements. So it would be the lowest cost.
Mr. Chairman, have we given any thought to the, Gene, to the escalation in the price positioning of the Fairbanks market with the F-35s coming in? I mean, you're about to have a market in terms of contractors is going to be pretty high.
That's one of those things that, unfortunately, our timing is what it is.
Timing is what it is.
But we certainly want to, and I know that the mayor out in North Pole is really dialed in, if he can line up the availability of the product as the housing is being built, we very much want to capture as much of that as our customers right from the get-go. There's no cheaper heating unit than the one that's first installed for gas. Not from propane to gas, not from fuel oil to gas. It's ready to use gas right from the first day.
Were you referring to the competition in the mechanical contract?
Yes.
That can be a challenge. The contractors that participate in projects such as the work going on at F-35s, some of them tend not to focus on the smaller residential work. So you have a different pool of contractors that you're looking at for that work.
I would say we'd have no problem in Fairbanks getting the furnace guys to put in and do the retrofits, as you're right, the big mechanical contractors, like Patrick Mechanical, aren't going to do a home anyway, so you don't need to worry about that.
I guess I was thinking more of the overlap between the new housing market and the retrofit market.
Well, the new housing market wouldn't use those big mechanical contractors either. They would use all the small guys we got lots of.
Who then are tied up. That's where I was going. And I just was thinking of that.
Could you give us an update on 7.1?
If I could just go down through just a couple last things on conversion. I know that AEA has really taken on and continues to work with the large municipalities about information of PACE. That's one of those tools that can help with conversion of businesses. So AEA shop continues to work on that with the on-bill repayment or financing. Again, I've been working with Representative Adam Lowell in Fairbanks. He introduced House Bill 374 and its first hearing. In fact, it may actually be going on right now, still going on. I work closely with his staff. Big thing there, the focus was to avoid a fiscal note. And so on Monday when the fiscal note was put out from the RCA, zero. So Dan gets to show drawings and time-lapse photography, and I get to show zero fiscal note. But in today's situation in Juneau, this is very important that we've got a zero fiscal note. So that bill, first hearing today, it'll be back up next week. We believe we've got a pretty good track to get it moving along. And then I also continue to get updates from Senator Murkowski's staff about ongoing funding to that EPA non-attainment grant. The expectation this year is that the borough will get $4 million out of that, I think it's a total of $20 million pot competitively awarded, and I anticipate that what I'm trying to track down with them is under the two-year budget deal that was structured in the Congress, is that ongoing funding assured, and I believe it's going to be, but I'm still waiting to hear back on that. So I think that's on conversion. Then on Senate Bill 125, which is Senator Pete Kelly's legislation to extend the time deadline on the authorized bonds for the IEP project, it passed the Senate unanimously. Unfortunately, when the schedule was put out to notice a hearing on the House side, they hadn't received the Senate bill yet, so they had the first hearing, or they're scheduling the first hearing on House Bill 261, which is an identical bill. That hearing took place on Monday. I was there to respond to all the questions on the project. The second hearing on that bill will be next week. At that time, the two bills will come together. The Senate bill will be the one that's reported out, so we'll be one committee away from that bill going up for its final floor action. So I think we're on track to get that piece of legislation passed this year, too.
Who's carried in the House for you?
It's Representative Steve Thompson. And there has been some, because it's an ADA bill, moving it through the process, people that are working ADA projects come and look for a vehicle to attach things to. We know that those things are out there. Senator Kelly has certainly let people know that he's not opposed to that, just as long as those people can assure that his bill doesn't get bogged down and runs the risk of not passing. So I think we're in a pretty good position to get that legislation passed, and also the on-bill repayment mechanism passed this year. And actually, on the an aside on the air quality issue, of course, a lot of this is we want to deliver a low-cost product. We believe that it will be a key part of Fairbanks North Suburban achieving their air quality. The DEC, working with the local government under EPA review, their air quality modeling consultant contacted me about a week ago, just wanting updated information on when the tank will be finished, when we can possibly serve another customer, and so I owe him information that I will supply to him hopefully today or tomorrow on that front. So just to let you know that they're watching this project very closely, and they believe, and rightfully so, that it is a key component of the local government getting control of the air quality issue. The last issue is just the North Slope pad. We have discussed with you previously a sublease. We did get a request from IGU for some possible modifications to the lease, and I know that Mr. Hemseth and Jerry Buday, who have been dealing with the negotiations, approached our sublessor on the suggestion that IGU was hoping there could be a little bit of a higher insurance threshold, and I think that was not rebuffed, and there's a very good chance of achieving that. The other request that they had was that the sublease, which will take up one-third of the North Slope pad, but 100% of the right-of-way that connects to the fuel gas system up there, that be utilized in a way that, if at all possible, it would accommodate somebody using the other two-thirds of the pad also that might have a need to get access to the fuel gas line, that they try and do so in a means that would potentially facilitate it that in the future. I think somebody that wants to do something on the other two-thirds would probably still have to go to ER for a right-of-way access to tap into that fuel gas line. But DNR is all about activity taking place on the pad, and so would be very supportive of giving that if it was necessary. I know that DNR is working with our proposed sublessor. DNR is also working with reviewing our request that the lease be transferred to ITU. They indicated to us via email that they have all the information that they need from us at this time.
Gene, can you give us an update on the RCA docket?
Yes, on the RCA docket, and actually jump back up to utility consolidation. That is one of the issues under utility consolidation. We did meet the deadline to make the application to the RCA for them to allow transfer of the service territory to IGU. There were public comments that were submitted. The close of public comments, I believe, was February 9th. We actually coordinated a response to the public comments that were submitted to provide some clarifying information with IGU. They submitted a response, and we did also, but we shared information back and forth before our individual responses to the public comments were submitted. And so that has been done. We are still waiting, though, to hear from the RCA whether they will grant us an expedited review and determination on that docket. That's docket U18001. We have not heard back on that yet, and so we hope to hear back on that soon. I think they are aware that we've got this target closing date to end of May. Hopefully, they will take action to help facilitate that because the transferability to consolidate or not actually consolidate but to transfer the service territory to IGU control is a key component of that of the closing. We have also put together a list of all the little closing documents. I know as you know when I buy a house I think I'm just going to sign the loan, but there's a lot of little documents to be signed. We want to make sure that nothing slips through the cracks, and so we have had our consultant put together that long laundry list, share it with IGU to make sure that we're in agreement of all those little things, again, that need to be anticipated before that closing date. I think that's where we are on the consolidation.
Okay.
Great. Gene and Dan, thank you for your response to the 17 public comments. I think that will expedite and certainly support our request for an expedited hearing. That's well worth reading, and I read them, and I took a lot of comfort in the fact that they were not very the ones that were against it were not had little or no substance, and those from the mayors and those people that you went out and asked for public comment, the Tim Surleys of the world, they're very compelling documents, and RCA is going to read those. I think thanks to you folks' work, that was well done and will help us get this wrapped up sooner. Thanks.
Okay. I echo Gary's sentiments.
And that was a coordinated effort with IGU, so appreciated working together with them. And then one last thing, the three mayors, local mayors from the interior, were in Juneau for a municipal league meeting, and I took the opportunity to get together with them to have lunch. And make sure that they were helping us to deal with some of the suggested alternatives, and they indicated to me and that they had communicated to the governor when they got together met with the governor about a month ago that they are very much behind this utility consolidation. They very much understand that under the consolidated utility that there needs to be a focus on making that entity successful. And while there may be some other things that can help on the periphery, you first have to make sure that this utility is successful.
Yeah, and reliable business. Well, I would like to thank you both. When you have a $47 million project, in my world, typically what we hear from the owner is, and the contractor is, while we're waiting for permits, they have this delay and that delay. And this board took some action, I think, the first part of December, and shortly thereafter, the construction began, and that's a great accomplishment. Everything was placed ready to go. I will tell you that's very rare on a $47 million project that there is not some hiccup, some agency somewhere in hinterland putting a roadblock up just to make sure some more T's maybe crossed, I's dotted. So from my experience, I appreciate that.
Thank you. And I know you're all excited about Dan's app, but you can get an app from the fiscal notes, too.
Not the senator, always the senator.
I tell you, legislative humor is different.
I mean, it's totally different. Oh, my goodness. Just to think about it, if we are thinking about it August 8th, the quicker we can nail that down.
Well, our meeting's August 8th. Isn't that correct?
August 9th.
August 9th.
Okay. Do you want to... So that's the date? Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you.
It coincides right with that Gantt chart, Dan. So it says they're going to have completed outer shell tanks. So there you go. There's your milestone.
Unfortunately, I might have to have someone else host because I'm going to be in Italy for my 25th wedding anniversary.
Well,
priorities.
Yeah. All right. So thank you for the IEP update. Next up is executive session. I'll entertain a motion to go into that.
Mr. Chairman, I move the board enter into an executive session to discuss confidential and financial information related to the Interior Energy Project and the Mustang Operations Center Mach 1.
Second. Objection? I'm going to executive session. Where are we going? Are we here or are we going?
You can either meet in here, kick all of us out, or go in the action room. Because as far as I know, you have nobody calling in for the executive session.
Okay.